Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Nick.
No!
In this episode, I'm chatting with Dr. Nick Housley, the Director of Clinical Research at Modis Nova. This is the second time I'm chatting with Dr. Nick on the show. This time around, we're talking about how goal setting is key during recovery, as well as the importance of creating better communication and understanding between doctors and patients to improve care after brain injury. Boom, intro done! Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Lauren.
And we are
the Neuro Nerds.
Yes, that was on time.
I feel pretty good about that.
Neuro Nerds.
After brain injury, it's common to feel like life as you knew it is gone forever. You may not be sure how to move forward and regain a sense of control and purpose, but there is hope. You can absolutely start living a meaningful and purpose-driven life after brain injury. It just might look a little different than it did before. That's where Rocky Recovery comes in. It's a step-by-step program designed specifically for brain injury survivors who want to start living their best life again. I'll help you set goals that are meaningful, attainable, and give you purpose post-brain injury so you can focus on recovery and start enjoying life once again. If you're ready to start living your best life after brain injury, enroll in Rock Your Recovery today at goals.usorock.coach. Now let's go rock your recovery together. Welcome to the Neuro Nerds. Who do I have with me? Very special guest. One of my people, right? I was going to say normies, but he's not a normie. He's actually part of this amazing community. He's one of the main cogs in the system that is Modis Nova, one of our partners. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Nick. What's up, Dr. Nick?
Not much, Joe. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you again today.
Of course. I love talking to you, Dr. Nick. I really appreciate your perspective on everything. And I always kind of forget that you're part of this community. Like I do. It's very rare that I get to speak to somebody on the other side because you're in the, how do I put this? I guess the tech neuro side of things. And very rarely do I speak to somebody like on a neuro side. Oh yeah, by the way, I have a brain injury as well. I forget that you're one of us. You're one of us.
Well, yeah, I feel very fortunate to be able to be have unique insight into both perspectives here. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I'm glad I can kind of have some life experience for both perspectives. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very cool. I always feel like we have like an inside man. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like a mental neuro brain heist when it comes to like recovery. Like we have somebody on the side because there's so many people that make decisions and base things on what they feel is best for our community. You experience it. You've experienced it. So you understand, hey, you know what? Maybe a little bit more left instead of to the right, because that makes sense because I'm the expert of having a brain injury. I love that. Like you're that's what you are now. You're Dr. Inside Man Housley. is that good?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. The name will keep getting longer, I guess. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to be able to have that perspective and I feel actually in a really kind of privileged position such that I kind of have that insight, mm-hmm. but I also feel the sort of the need, the commitment to the community to also take kind of what I've learned and really make it as accessible as possible. Because I think there is, you know, not everyone can do this.
Right.
So I really enjoy the opportunity to disseminate some of that information, the data. So yeah, I love these kind of conversations and being able to share kind of what I've learned over the years.
Yeah. So we're just going to keep on adding on to your name. It's going to be really weird if you're going to have like a intercompany softball game and you have to fit all of the nicknames on your back. You might
just go around like the sleeve or down and around. Yeah,
it's just going to keep on going in a circle round and round and round. It's like, man, Dr. Nick is very impressive.
if nothing else, though, the name will keep getting longer, whether or not that ties to impressiveness, a different story entirely.
I think if you keep on adding to anything, it becomes more and more impressive. So Dr. Nick, so I think speaking of perspectives, you have such a unique perspective on the creation of working with this company, helping in the creation of like the Modus Hand, the Modus Foot, I believe too. I don't really know much about the Modus Foot. I mess with the Modus Hand, which is an amazing piece of machinery, but also the fact that like you've recovered yourself. You had your own brain injury recovery journey, which I love so much. So I wanted to talk a little bit about like goal setting, right? I think it's really important after a brain injury to like set goals. Now, a lot of times, and I don't know if you've experienced this with people in the community or even yourself, initially your goals are like way too broad and they're way too out there. Now, when I say out there, it's more along the lines of, yeah, I want the old me back. And that's like, that's cool. Not necessarily attainable really, because that version is kind of gone. We can figure out how to get back some of the things that you used to be able to do maybe, or even exceed where you used to be. At least that's like where I'm coming from. I'm coming from where I don't want that old version of myself. I want the newest, best version of myself moving forward. That took a while though. It didn't initially start with like, oh, let me take these gradual steps and improve these things. It was just like, I just want to be better in everything. You know, I'm standing, so I want to sprint now. It was like the goals, they weren't small. They were just really jumbled and strange early on. During your own personal recovery, did you have like crazy goals? Did you have like focused goals? Or were you always like, you know what, this is exactly how you're supposed to recover in this way? Or, you know, like tell me about like your goal setting early on in recovery.
Yeah, this is interesting. So I think, first of all, Joe, there's a lot of really interesting things that we could talk about in the kind of discussion there. I think the goal setting is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. Also making sure that they're measurable and tractable. We can talk about all that stuff, as well as kind of having a little bit of understanding that you kind of already mentioned this, but fundamentally, we're kind of different after we've had a neurologic injury, right? Like our states are just different. That kind of emerges from my understanding of the world that you and I emerge from neural circuits. Our personalities emerge from that because that's how it works. And so, you know, when you have a neurologic injury and some of those fundamental components are just altered, whether or not it's damaged or they're not working in the same way, we're kind of different. And kind of recognizing that and understanding that can also help us give a little bit of grace to ourselves to be different, which is okay. Right. But yeah, so happy to talk about all those things. I think it'd be great to incorporate some of our unique experiences as well as maybe some of the data into the discussion. I kind of found myself at a really unique position when I had my injury. So at this point, actually, it's 10 years ago as of March 24th so it was March 24th, 2012. And so I was actually a professional bike racer at that time. And so I was a competitive athlete and trying to do the Olympics, trying to do the whole professional athlete thing. And so I came at it out of that brain injury with that sort of mindset of, well, I was still under professional contract. There was kind of this obligation and expectation that I would get back to that level. And so there was this sort of almost imposed goal and imposed timeline for this, because professional sports, it's you're only as good as your last race or last event. And so there's some version of that. So yeah, I had some really, really high expectations and really, really a challenging sort of series of steps that I had to overcome. Mm-hmm. And of course, this was complicated by the fact that they found a brain tumor following the accident. And so that complicated things and cascaded a whole bunch of decision making. But yeah, I mean, the I came out of that with some really, really lofty expectations. And then when you get into it, the reality kind of really slaps you up a little bit.
Yeah.
And helps you really understand that, hey, maybe your expectations are not reasonable. And maybe we need to be a bit more realistic. Mm-hmm. And for me, a lot of that came down to maybe not that I couldn't perform athletically, but I had memory cognitive issues as well as, you know, balance and proprioceptive disorders, which were fairly problematic and which is pretty complicated, especially if you're trying to ride a bike.
Right. If you're trying to balance on two wheels, that's very awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I was also doing my undergraduate degree. So a lot of this also was even before I had this sort of unique insight, right? That was the whole, this whole experience of going through a brain injury was the sort of incipient moment for me, or the kind of a spark that kind of redirected my sort of life path away from professional athletics into something like the sort of study of the brain and how it recovers. I would have liked, not that I would wish this upon anyone, but it would be kind of interesting to be able to have that sort of deep insight, that deep training, and then have some sort of life experience. But I had it the other way around, which is okay, I guess.
Hey, you were dealt that hand and you ran with it, you know?
Yeah.
So I did want to ask you about you put some, again, really heavy expectations on yourself early on.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say obviously, percentages say that wasn't going to happen. When did it actually hit you that, wow, this is not attainable, at least not right now? Like when, and I don't want to say like, when did you, the walls and the roof start crashing down, but like, when did like reality hit you in the face and say, yeah, you're nowhere near these goals. You're going to have to reevaluate.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was in the first weeks, right? It didn't take long to understand that you don't just bounce back from having a traumatic brain injury and then having, I had multiple surgeries, multiple reconstructive surgeries after that. So every single time I got hit, and you know, you have a goal like, oh, I'm going to get back to it. I'm going to, like, a couple weeks after I was trying to get back on a bike, and then I have to go get surgery, and you just keep getting, you know, hit. So no, it was a continual process of being made strongly aware that my goals and expectations were not aligned with reality. So it was a fairly quick process to realize that.
Yeah. When I didn't hit certain goals, whatever it was, you know, walking X amount of time, being able to jog, mm-hmm. but whatever it was, I fell into like almost really deep depression immediately, because it was just like, I can't do these basic things like stand on one leg. Like it was just these really small goals, like these very simple things that I really took for granted forever. And I just like mentally, I just dipped so quickly. Did you have a little bit of that like emotional dip where it's like, this is just, everything sucks?
Yeah. I mean, again, I can't speak for anyone else, but I mean, I'll be very, very honest about this. I think it's still something that I struggle with now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the better part of, 12 years, my identity was basically rooted in trying to be a professional athlete. And so when you have that sort of component of your life, mm-hmm. I don't say forcibly removed, but removed.
Yeah.
It really causes some big changes in the way you perceive yourself, let alone how the world perceives you or you interact with the world. And so, yeah, it's a catastrophic event, and it can fundamentally change those things. Yeah. Whenever you don't hit, you know, if you're on the path to recovery and you've already had that life-shaping event and you set these unreasonable expectations, or maybe if they are reasonable expectations in some circumstance that comes up prevents you or precludes you from hitting those goals under those certain contexts or time frames, and yeah, no doubt it caused grief, depression, anxiety, all of it. I think it's completely reasonable that happens,
right?
Because it's the expectations are not being, you know, your expectations are not being met. So
now, when it came to reevaluating your expectations into figuring out, okay, well, this is my new reality right now, right? Mm-hmm. When were you able to just shift from, hey, I'm going to be an Olympic level biker again, to becoming a little bit more reasonable in your recovery goals? Like, when were you able to figure out, okay, I don't have to hit the moon right now. I just have to hit like, you know, block and a half away. That's where I'm going. Like, when did attainable goals kick in?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were, in terms of the athletics, it's pretty, the discovery of the brain tumor kind of made that a definitive stop.
Right.
So that actually kind of really caused things to not be possible in the athletic side. So maybe I can provide maybe an example from my experience in terms of the educational side of things. Because I was also doing the kind of professional sportsman, but also trying to do education. And I was actually going at the undergrad level for pre-med. So I was hoping to be a physician. And so one of the things that I immediately kind of pivoted on was I had real problems with memory and sort of attention and these sorts of things. And that was actually making it very, very hard. And I actually had a lot of self-doubt in whether or not I could actually go back to school and do the rigorous sort of mental training, educational, right. Achieve those educational goals. And so I had a big pivot. And so I changed from a genetics undergrad to a physiology undergrad or a sort of a movement science-based undergrad because I doubted myself. Mm-hmm. But then I developed those tools. It took me longer. I had to kind of explore how my new kind of brain worked. I had to develop some strategies to be able to learn with my new system. And then I found that, oh, actually I could do this. I have to do it differently. It takes a different amount of time. But after that pivot, you figure things out. But it took a lot longer than I would have hoped for or would have anticipated.
Right. Were you accepting of that or did you fight it? Because I know early on in my recovery, I fought everything. I didn't want, especially like physically, I was like, I'm not going to use this cane. I'm not going to do that. I refused to accept the fact that I needed it. The reality is I needed it, but like I refused. So I was in a lot of pain because I resisted. It wasn't until I fell like a commercial, like I've fallen and I can't get up. It wasn't until I had that moment where I'm on my back, just staring at the ceiling, contemplating, well, how did I get here? Right. It wasn't until then where I was like, okay, I need a cane. It's not that I want it. I need a cane. But that's when acceptance happened. And once like I accepted it, it was easier for me to say, okay, now what can I do to get rid of this damn cane? I just don't want it. Were you accepting of the fact that you not only physically, you weren't able to do, you were different physically, but you were also different cognitively, like especially with memory? You know, I know the memory issue is like the worst, but were you accepting or were you resistant? Like, did it take a while for you to say, you know what? I think differently now.
Are you a stroke or brain injury survivor looking for community and support? Well, the NeuroNerds are here to help. Join our free You So Rock community platform to connect with other survivors like you. Once you join our community, you'll have access to free virtual events and resources to help with your brain injury recovery. You can make new friends, jump on audio chat conversations, and even join my private coaching program to get one-on-one support. So what are you waiting for? Go to community.usorock.coach. Yes, that's .coach, not .com, and join the You So Rock community today.
I think differently now. I move differently now.
Define a while. can you give me some context? I mean, people's perspectives are different there in terms of what those things
very true. Mean. I can speak for me. So for myself, I couldn't even utter the words, the phrase, I had a stroke for about a year. And then, at least the first several months, like holding a cane, I couldn't accept the fact that I needed it. You know, I'm like, I played, a little bit college sports. And I'm like, I can't do this. I'm not that guy. The reality was because I looked at it through a different lens. I looked at it through a lens of I used to be so strong. Now I'm so weak and feeble. When the reality is recovering from a brain injury is possibly, one of the most masculine, dominant, physical and emotional, spiritual, mental things anybody can do. Like it takes true grit to do that, to be a professional athlete, as you were, to be a college athlete. That takes a lot, but it pales in comparison to like brain injury recovery. You know, I just saw it differently.
Yeah. And I don't use this analogy or this comparison lightly when I talk to people that I work with, whether they're patients or people that work with us at Modus. I actually compare what they do to an athletic endeavor, and I treat them like professional athletes because what they're doing is the same level. It should be the same level of commitment and rigor that a top level athlete applies, because that's actually what it requires. Now, of course, you don't have to do that, but if you really want to attain the most recovery possible, then that level of commitment is almost a necessity.
Right.
And so I love that analogy, that comparison, because it is that grit that will really be is exceptionally important. Yeah.
So you had an identity crisis, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
You
oh,
were, yeah. Hey, I am in, this is a really cool thing to say out loud. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I were you, I would say constantly, oh yeah, I was a professional athlete. That sounds amazing, right? You were a professional athlete. And I don't know if that was your entire personality. It would 100% be mine. But I just think that's a really amazing thing. Like, you were part of a very unique club, a very tiny percentage of people where you were a professional athlete. And then you went from that to, I am no longer that. Like, that's a shock to your system. Like, when, now I'm not saying like you just gave up everything athletic, but actually, you know, shifting your personality and who you are. And I know that took time. Is that something that you're still working through, or is that something that you finally come to accept? Hey, I am a professional, maybe not be a professional athlete, but I'm a professional changing the world. Like, is the fact that you're literally Dr. Nick changing the world for the better, does that, you know, lift some of the weights of the heaviness of losing the fact that you're a professional athlete?
Yeah, I think this is this took me probably 6 years.
6 years. Okay.
7 years, 8 years, something like that, to actually understand that I was actually having an identity crisis. It didn't take me that long to actually deal with it. It took me that long to actually go, oh, damn. That's what it is. And to be very frank about this, because I don't think there's any reason to pull any punches with this. Mm-hmm. I'm still dealing with that.
Right.
Right. I mean, I still ride bikes now. I'm not nearly as fast as I used to be.
Right.
But there's some little part of my reptilian brain that's just like, yeah, you can still do this, Nick.
Right.
And no, so there's still a part of me that's always going to be that little pro cyclist that just won't die.
Right.
Right. In my head. And maybe that's for the better, because it'll keep me healthy. I can still ride bikes and still, you know, train and be aerobically fit and these sorts of things. But no, it is, for me personally, I think it's going to be a lifelong journey to experience that change.
No, I love that. Yeah. I love the honesty. And I think that if we're all being honest with ourselves, we still struggle. The person who has accepted this immediately, and this is just what life is, and that's great. There is still that thing in the back of your mind sometimes where it's like, yeah, it is, but I don't want it to be. And I really miss this other thing. And maybe I can still do it. I mean, like, it's always going to be there. It's just not painfully taking over, you know, our mental state. I Dr. Nick, that's awesome. Thank you for being so transparent about that, because I think we all feel that. Like, we miss that old version of ourselves. I miss Joe 1.0 sometimes. Like, I love this version of myself, and Dr. Nick 2.0 is a rock star, right? But there's still that, you know, yeah, I really enjoyed doing those things. I don't think I would change anything. Like, I wouldn't go back and not give myself a stroke. If I can go back and not give that, but still have this perspective, it would be great. That's not possible. But I think I'm better for it. I really do. I think it's helped transform me into the best version of myself. And I think I'm better, not just for myself, but for the world too, because I think I'm helping a lot of people. And that's something that I wouldn't have been able to do. Does that bring you a little solace? Does that bring you a little joy?
It does. Fact no.
That now, for, again,
for sure.
As a professional athlete, I'm sure, completely different life, right? But you have...
I don't know, Joe. Well, you have literally,
now, not figuratively, you have literally changed so many lives. That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for your brain injury.
Yeah, that's the thing I always, like, I have some comfort. Whenever I find myself in this, you know, dark place. And I still find myself in those every now and then when you still, like, well, I still have friends who, like, race the Tour de France, right? Or still have people that are you know, people that I've grew up with in racing. Like, yeah, they're still kicking ass and taking names in a cycling community. I know it's not super big in the US, but it was meaningful. Right. And so, but the fact that that life event that I went through kind of set me on a path to a series of decisions. And of course, there's so much luck involved in this. We have to acknowledge, and everyone else listening, that all the sort of circumstances lined up in the right time for me to then be able to, you know, have access to the education, the opportunities to gain the knowledge, the fundamental neuroscience knowledge and the clinical knowledge, and be able to help develop tools that can help people. So yeah, I get a lot of value, a lot of fulfillment in my life to be able to help anyone.
Right.
So yeah, Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. I'm thankful. And you know, if you were just a cyclist, I would know you. I'm happy to know you. You know, I really am. And I don't want to be, hey doc, I'm so happy you had a brain injury. I'm not. I know the community is thankful that you're part of this community because of the impact that you've had on so many. Also, being the inside man, I cannot stress how important that is, that we have somebody on the inside speaking for us, you know, because we have so many normies that speak for us that have no idea what we go through. So I'm really, really happy that, you know, you're our inside guy.
Yeah. And I think that if nothing else, there needs to be more presence, mm-hmm. more advocacy from individuals that have actually had brain injuries. Like, those advocates need to be more explicitly involved in whatever sort of resources, tools, products, you know, whatever that's being developed to help the community. We need to have a voice there.
Agreed.
If not explicitly involved mm-hmm. in the design, implementation of these systems and tools and processes. So yeah, I don't take that lightly, being able to be an advocate on the inside, as you say. I think it's exceptionally important.
I think it's really, really cool. Like, I do. Like, it's just cool. It's cool to have like our person there. You know what I mean? Like, it really yeah. is, because you would ask questions, and also you would do it. You come from both sides, you know. You're like the day walker. You don't have any of the devs. You have all the positives. Like, you come from the brain injury side of the community, but you also know how to make all that stuff work. You know mm-hmm. how the brain works. You also know what it is to live with a brain injury. I just think it's so valuable. Like, it's just, it blows my mind, doc. It does.
And especially for like the topics that we're talking about today, like this focus on goal setting, right? Mm-hmm. It makes it so important to help, to have that insight, to be able to direct the development, like, you know, specifically for the modus hand.
Right.
Right. To be able to have that insight, to be able to shape the way that the interfaces work, the tools themselves, how they interface with individuals with brain injury, being able to shape the way that it communicates to somebody, right? Because, you know, so much of this focus on goal setting and understanding kind of what are reasonable expectations and well, first of all, what are goals and how do we know if we're there, you know, that ability to have data and being able to present that data is helpful to understand, you know, where we are along that path. So yeah, being able to kind of understand what's important to communicate to people, and then be able to explicitly incorporate that into a tool or process, I think is exceptionally important and valuable to the community.
And even the fact that you guys have taken, you've gamified recovery, which is just honestly one of the most brilliant things in the world, because recovery, let's be honest, it's boring. It's boring. It's tedious. It's doing the exact same thing over and over and over again. Well, how do you, you know what the modus hand is? It's spices, right? So you basically, you can eat the same food every single day. It's going to keep you alive. It's going to keep you healthy, but it's boring. So what do you do to change it up? You spice it differently. I'm going to add some garlic.
It's your boiled chicken breast, and you can then have, or you could have some Cajun chicken breast if you want some Cajun chicken. Right?
Exactly. You know, I'm going to throw in some paprika in there. I'm going to throw in some garlic. And it's like, yeah, this is it's the exact same thing, just done differently. And that's what the modus hand is. It's literally, you're moving your hand. You're getting in the repetitions that you need to recover. You're just doing it. You're gamifying, like, you're doing it to a game. You're doing it to, you know, you're shooting something, you're moving a guy, like, it makes it exciting.
Are you finding it hard to recover at home after stroke? Find out if Modus Nova can help you by taking their free online assessment at modusnova.com/theneuronerds. If you haven't heard of Modus Nova, they make devices to help folks with a brain injury, like stroke, regain the use of their affected limbs. For example, the Modus Hand is an AI-powered robotic exoskeleton that helps users do exercises and play games, similar to the way an occupational or a physical therapist might manipulate the limb. It helps survivors get in the thousands of repetitions they need to form new neural pathways. It can assist with hand movements or resist them to provide a personalized exercise experience. If this sounds like something you want to try, visit modusnova.com/theneuronerds to learn more. Use special code TheNeuroNerds when you sign up and get a month free with the 30-day challenge. Just visit modusnova.com/TheNeuroNerds to get started.
Who knew that spices and the modus hand are one and the same? I had a question about you know, you were part of a cycling team, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you guys trained, it was as a team, right?
Yeah, it was interesting, right? So yes, in a simple sense, yes, but a lot of it's also individual.
Mm-hmm.
So there are team camps,
right?
And then you might have like a local group that you would ride with. Maybe a subset of your team live local to you,
right?
And you would ride with them. But oftentimes you're kind of sort of geographically dispersed,
right?
So you don't always train with the team every single day.
So when you're training by yourself, it's a little bit more of a this is all me, and you have to have that motivation to do it. But having the team there and knowing that you have guys to back you up, on top of the fact that you, I'm sure, have some guys to keep you to hold you accountable. When you have your brain injury, you're recovering from your brain injury, you kind of just have yourself. Did you have a team? Did you have other people in the community to kind of help give you that little nudge to kind of hold you accountable, keep you motivated to keep going?
Yeah, yeah, certainly. And I think I kind of know where you're going with this in terms of the community for the brain injury side of things. Yeah, no, certainly, yes. And thankfully, I was in an area where there were still members of the cycling community that were willing to, you know, on like the first rides I ever did outside, I went out with a group of people and they would literally ride around me like as a circle. If you know anything about like cycling, you can kind of ride around somebody to kind of protect them.
Right.
Having the community, having the backup, having, if nothing else, just the recognition and the acknowledgement that you're kind of making progress,
right,
is huge. Let alone all the things that have to happen off the bike in this case, or off the athletic endeavor, for you to even get to that point, which is, of course, the family. You know, my now wife was just instrumental in that process. Right. And of course, all of the medical people, all of that was just incredible.
You found your team.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's really, really important to have a team, you know. Now we all look, brain injury recovery, it's unique. I always say every brain injury is a thumbprint. It's a snowflake. There are no two that are the same. We could be have the exact same thing and react completely differently. But I kind of think brain injury recovery, it's like a puzzle, right? We kind of have the outline of what it is. We know what it is. We know how it started and we know where we want to go. Everything that happens in the middle, all of those puzzle pieces, I think every single survivor has a piece of that puzzle. And the more that we talk to one another, the more information we gather, we can start filling in the pieces of the puzzle. That's what I love about connecting with other survivors. The tips, the tricks. That's what I love about talking to the inside man over here, who has, you know, tips and tricks on the inside, on the neurological, like medical side of the brain injury recovery community. I just think we have to talk and connect much more often, you know. That's why I'm doing my best to build community. I just started the USO Rock community. I'm really excited about, which is cool. So it's like it's a new platform, right? Why I like it. There's a lot more interaction. And then I was talking to Felice about it, and she's like, yeah, people are really like interacting with each other and they're doing these things. And I'm like, yes, it's a lot like, let's say, Instagram or Facebook or something like that. But when you're on Instagram or Facebook, you have an ad that pops up, or you have somebody else's thing and they're doing this other thing. And then, oh, Nicki Minaj is performing here, and you're distracted with all these things. This is literally just the group. It's just the USO Rock community, and it's just people helping each other out. I love that. And I think it's essential, because I remember when I was recovering by myself, it sucked. It's the best way to describe it. It was lonely. I felt isolated and it sucked. I didn't have the motivation that I did once I started connecting with other survivors. Now, I played team sports. I was a basketball player. So when I trained, yes, I trained with other guys, but when we were doing like trying to get in cardiovascular shape, it's a lot of running. Running is boring, but I always had my guys there. Like I always had like, hey, I have to do this for me because this person's doing it too. And it's like, I had that extra little push to keep going. That's why I was curious about, like, you know, when you were cycling, because it wasn't just you, even when you were training by yourself, I'm sure you had in the back of your mind, I'm doing this not for me, I'm doing this for us. Correct?
Yeah. And the other thing too, which is interesting, this will be hopefully a nice little kind of intro to something. The cycling is not just that you ride a bike, right? It's also more so now than maybe in the 90s or early 2000s, but it is exceptionally data driven. Meaning you collect data on your speed, all that stuff. That makes sense. People understand that. but we're collecting data on, you can sort of stratify people's what are called kind of workout zones or your zones of intensity that you can actually sustain for set amounts of time. And so you collect data in those areas with a power meter, or you can, like, heart rate zones, you can do that, but it's much more accurate to do with power. And then you can calculate how many kilojoules, how much actual workload, mathematically speaking, you actually do. And this helps you to actually understand what your capacities are, how they change over time. And what's really interesting is that you actually have your coaching staff is watching that. Mm-hmm. And you have planned workouts that if you don't hit, somebody knows because your data gets transmitted. And so, you know, you can kind of have a little bit of, not only is your team cheering for you, but you also have kind of the expectation that you have these certain activities that need to be met in order for you to reach these performance metrics.
Right. You don't want to let down the coach because they know they're aware. Well, that's what's really cool about the Modus hand, because you're actually you want to get in the reps and you want your scores to be high. Also, I want to beat that person because you're actually seeing other people's scores. You're actually competing against other people. So, you know, you're pushing yourself, but you're also pushing the other people to catch you, hopefully. And if not, you know, you're trying to catch them. I love that extra little push that we have in the community.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, that's really interesting about the data side of things, and this is of course kind of in the weeds, but it's important to get in the weeds every now and then.
Absolutely.
And so the data itself, not only is it useful to kind of see how you stack up against other people, I personally, my opinion about this is, like, that's great as a motivating factor, but it's not useful necessarily to help us establish what are reasonable expectations and goals for ourselves. And what the data is helpful for, anchoring where you are right now and understanding sort of a range of possible outcomes that are reasonable in a given amount of time. And having that ability to measure that is important, because you can know if what you're doing is helping you go towards that goal, or if it's actually detracting from you. So it actually helps you make better decisions. Is this, I was kind of wondering about that, that online platform you're talking about, if maybe people can even do, like, I don't want to say kind of brain injury community science, where they maybe even do data collection themselves and they say, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing it for these sorts of metrics and it's working. It's helping me do this, that, or the other. And there's ways we can kind of do some community-based science to help disseminate what is kind of working for people and what's not. So I just kind of off the cuff thinking about this.
Dr. Nick, have I mentioned I love your brain? I love your brain. I love the way that it takes me back to high school and, like, you know, a little bit of the next level of sports, where data was just starting to happen in the 90s, right? They just started to figure out certain things. So I had one of my assistant coaches was a really nerdy dude. And he would figure out exactly, like, okay, this is where you score. This is where you suffer. And I looked at it. And I was like, no, I'm a better block. Put me down on the block. That's where I thrive. And he's like, yes. But then he actually showed me the data on the wing. Your percentages skyrocket. And not just for you. Look at where we are as a team. And I was like, it blew my mind. It really did. Because I was like, no, I'm great in the block. It's like, yes, you're good. But the team suffers. Like, you do better here because everybody else gets involved. It was like this really crazy mind thing. Just thinking about data, I started to think about, I've been saying this to the community without realizing that I need to tell them to collect this data. When we become overwhelmed or overstimulated, or, you know, our deficits just start to, like, take over. Why is that? I tell everybody to journal, write stuff down, check your sleep, check the amount of water you're taking in. I realize when my deficits are, you know, just intensifying, I'm overwhelmed, right? There's something outside that's stressing me out. So then my hand starts to suffer a little bit more. I start to forget. I'll lose words in those moments. Also, when I'm not hydrated, when I'm not hitting my water goals, I'm suffering. So all of that is data. All of that is stuff that I should be writing down. And I think all of us should too. If you guys don't journal, I think it's really important to journal, whatever it is. A sleep journal is great to know exactly, like, well, I suffered that day. Why did you suffer that day? Oh, you only have 4 hours of sleep the day before that. That's probably why. On top of that, you had a very stressful day the day before, so you're tired. On top of that, you're not hitting your water goals. So, like, all of these things, if we keep track of that, I think we'll have better days. and it's all about information. It's so crazy. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really cool idea to try to integrate that, because as you said, there's so much information out there in individual people's experiences, right? Like just imagine, you know, 7 million stroke survivors across the U.S. This is the U.S. alone. Of course, there's millions more across the world. But just imagine all of the unique knowledge that is garnered by one person's journey going through this over just even a set amount of time. And if we just could capture a small fraction of that, we could learn a lot about what works for people, what doesn't, based on their unique factors. But we just need to be able to figure out ways to capture this. I think that's the intimidating thing is, I guess maybe the problem is it can be intimidating.
Absolutely.
To actually, you know, when I say as a scientist, why don't you just collect some data? And everyone's like, I don't know how to do this. And let me just give you a quick example. This is actually something that I recommend for people. You know, whenever you start something new, before you start something new, let's say it's an intervention or a therapy or whatever you're doing, some exercise that's directed at, say, walking or maybe hand function, I always recommend take a picture. Better yet, take a video of you trying to do the thing that you're trying to help. In this case, let's say my canonical example is always pick up a cup of coffee. If you're trying to work on picking up a cup of coffee, take a video of yourself doing that. And it's okay if it fails. It's always okay if it fails. If it doesn't look pretty, that's fine. It doesn't matter. But you want good baseline data to see if what you're doing is actually helping you, because you don't know, because we live with ourselves in too high fidelity.
Right.
It's easy for me to get lost in like the tiny little changes that happen. I won't be able to detect that. But for instance, maybe if I look back in a 3-month period, oh yeah, I can really see a difference.
Right.
And so being able to capture that, you know, that's just a very easy way to do this. Always have kind of phones. You could have a care partner or a friend, or even set up a little, you know, makeshift tripod, video yourself doing something, and then do your therapy, do your exercises, do whatever you need to do. And then do continual evaluations and see what works and what doesn't. And then you can share with the community.
I fucking love the way you think, Doc. So I was thinking even right now in the, you know, the User Rock community, I think there should be a little group or room where it could be a data-driven room, right? Like, hey guys, like let's figure some stuff out, right? And everybody will just put in exactly what it is, either daily or weekly, and you know, because so many things can happen from that. We can figure out some stuff. We can figure out like when we're firing on all cylinders, when we're suffering, why we're suffering. Maybe we can, you know, we can learn a lot more about ourselves, but also help each other through this time with data. Who knew that data was so important? Oh yeah. Everyone in the world, all of these giant juggernaut companies understand what data is. That's why they collect all of our stuff. It's very important. You know, it's filling in the gaps and really trying to understand like what we need moving forward. Look, bad companies do it for bad reasons. Good companies do it for good reasons. Right. So like, let's try to get this good information out there. I just think that's brilliant. Doc, you're brilliant. I hope you hear that frequently, because you are. Like, I love the way that you think, and I love the fact that you're an inside man. I'm going to send you a link to the community. I'd love for you to check it out. And if you have any thoughts or ideas, obviously, I listen to you because you're brilliant. So, and the way that Doc Nick thinks, right? This is what Modus Nova is. It's very well thought out. It's very well put together. It has that little extra brain injured love and care I say this like in all seriousness, even though I joke all the time, that extra little comforting hug that Modus is, I really think that's you, Doc. I do, because you're speaking for us. You're speaking for our community because you're part of this community, not just on the outside because you work with us, but you've experienced what it's like to live with a brain injury, to move forward with a brain injury, to heal and recover from a brain injury. And it's so invaluable. And I'm like beyond thankful for everything that you do and will do for our community. You're a rock star, Doc.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah. I mean, I don't take it lightly. And I mean, I appreciate the accolades, but it's not needed. I do this because I want to do it, and I love what I do, and I feel very fortunate to be able to do it. So yeah, and I think being able to put the effort and kind of have the team at Modus really adopt and really internalize that mission, which is basically we want to see a world where everyone reaches their maximum medical recovery. That's really what we want. And so it's really great that we not only have a team that really ingests and puts forward that mission, but also the fact that they're very adept at these sort of next generation type of thinking, like the data, for instance. Those ideas about using data to help people optimize their outcomes, it is well within our wheelhouse. It is one of our chief sort of focus areas. So
it's so brilliant, and so is Dr. Nick. And definitely check out Modus Nova. Go to modusnova.com, is it?
You got it.
Go to modusnova.com. You can also check them out on the socials at Modus Nova. Look, I said there's a lot of companies out there. There are a lot of brain injured accessories and helpful things. This is a company that I truly believe in and I care about. So definitely give them a listen. You also do something on Facebook, don't you, Doc?
I do. I don't do as much as I probably should. It's one of these things that I would very much love to be able to have a one-on-one conversation with every stroke survivor, every survivor of an AVM, for instance, or traumatic brain injury, or spinal cord injury. But yeah, it's really tough to do that. So I will do my best to communicate on the socials and try to, if I got really good questions, I try to post them as well. And so send me your good questions and I will do my best to answer them directly. And then maybe we can share them with the world if you feel comfortable with that. Because then we can learn from each other.
Hey, that's getting that data out there. Like it's essential, not just for us, but for the community. Look, we're Dr. Nick, you're leaving an incredible impact on not just this community, but this world. I'm so thankful for it. So definitely you can reach out to Dr. Nick. Go to modusnova.com as well as at modusnova on the socials. If you want to attempt to reach out to my tiny, beautiful ass kicking co-host, Lauren, you can at Lauren L. Manzano on Instagram. You can reach out to me at Josel Rocks on all the socials. You can reach out to us at the Neuro Nerds everywhere. Doc, so thankful for you. I really am. Also just want, I haven't said it enough this episode. I'm going to scream it from the rooftops at some point. Dr. Nick Housley, very attractive man. Just saying it, just throwing it out there. I just wanted to say that. I appreciate you so much. And on that slightly awkward note, this Neuro Nerd is out. Doc, that was awesome. That was really cool.
I think that you're gonna make me blush, man.
Hey, survivors, caregivers, and nerds of all kinds. We are so grateful for each and every one of you who have taken the time to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really makes our day. Not only do we read every single one, but we love reading them on our episodes. So if you haven't already, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us spread the word about the show. And when you do, just let us know by tagging at the NeuroNerds on Twitter. We might even read your review on our next episode.
NeuroNerds.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.